a.m. 7 nights a week. Before we go, I decide to take a final look around the country that I have honestly grown to love. I start, briefly, in London. Goodness me, but isn't London big? It seems to start about 20 minutes after you leave Dover, and just goes on and on, mile after mile of endless grey suburbs with their wandering ranks of terraced houses and stuccoed semis that always look more or less identical from a train, as if they've been squeezed out of a very large version of one of those machines they used to make sausages. How, I always wonder, do all the millions of occupants find their way back to the right boxes each night in such a complex and anonymous sprawl? I'm sure I couldn't. London remains a vast and exhilarating mystery to me. It constantly amazes me to read the Evening Standard or chat with an acquaintance and encounter some reference to a district that has managed to elude my ken for 21 years. "We've just bought a little place in Fag End, near Tungsten Heath," somebody will say, and I'll think, "I've never even heard of that place. How can this possibly be?" I had stuck a London A to Z in my rucksack and came across it now while searching unsuccessfully for half a Mars bar that I was sure was in there somewhere. Plucking it out, I idly leafed through its busy pages, as ever, amazed and quietly excited to find it peppered with districts, villages, sometimes small swallowed cities whose names, I would swear, had not been there the last time I looked. And the thing is, I know that the next time I look there will be other, different names. It is as deep a mystery to me as the lost tablets of Titianca or the continuing appeal to millions of Noel Edmonds. Anyhow, I spent a couple of days in London doing nothing much. I did a little research at a newspaper library, spent most of one afternoon trying to find my way through the complex network of pedestrian subways at Marble Arch, did a little shopping, saw some friends. Everyone I saw said, "Gosh, you're brave," when I revealed that I was planning to travel around Britain by public transport, but it never occurred to me to go any other way. You're so lucky in this country to have a relatively good public transport system, and I think we should all try harder to enjoy it, while it's still there. Besides, driving in Britain is such a dreary experience. My thoughts on that, and much, much more, tomorrow.
And his thoughts on those are here tomorrow, Tuesday at 2:45. Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson, abridged and read by Kerry Shale, and produced by Paul Kent.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Wes Butters at 3, drama to come next on 4 Extra, and a story that was turned into a play for The National in 2005, with a Broadway transfer and a host of Tony Award nominations. Then it's over to Mel for the 4 o'clock show, complete with a new nature series all about Britain's favourite farmland birds, and the next episode of Philippa Pearce's classic story, Tom's Midnight Garden. That's Monday's 4 o'clock show in 1 hour. Now then, a story described by the Whitbread Children's Book of the Year judging panel as brilliant, moving and ultimately compelling when it won in 2000. This is Jamila Gavin's own dramatisation of her acclaimed novel set in the mid-18th century. This is The Coram Boy.
Get on with it, damn your eyes! Oi! Wake up, you lazy dog! Can you see one of those panniers slipping on that mule there?
That's Otis Gardner. Potsman. Jack of all trades. He could barter the hind leg off a donkey. Especially if the donkey was a pretty young woman. As a boy, I used to see him on the Ashbrook estate, selling his pots and pans to the farm cottages, and flirting with our housemaids up at Ashbrook House. How they fell for his winning ways. We never used to see this.
Make sure I get blasted, Lou! Why was I cursed with an idiot for a son? Now take down that saddlebag and get on with it. Stop that bleating dog before I twist his neck!
Yes, Dar! How do you hit me, Dar?
Shut up, Jester!
I've done it, Dar!
That's how he treated Meshach, his only boy.
Get on with it!
An awkward lad. He looked as if he'd been put together all wrong.
It's getting dark, Jester. I'm afraid of the dark.
Coming
Corum Boy by Jamila Gavin. Part 1, The Corum Man.
Meshach! God damn your eyes.
No one loved Meshach ever again after his mother died, except his dog Jester. She had never seen his imperfections. To her, he was perfect. When everyone else saw a gawping loon, she saw an angel. He only learned to talk at all because she talked to him, always telling him stories.
"What have we here?" exclaimed the midwife, as she delivered one baby after another. "That can't be," wept the young wife, as one by one, seven little baby girls were born and laid into a basket.
"Seven babies, Mom?"
"Yes, Meshach, my love, my sweetheart. Imagine, seven babies." She was upset, fit to die. "Keep one," she told the midwife, "but take the rest away. Do what you like with them."
"Here!
Are you the Corum Man?"
That was the first time Meshach ever heard his father called the Corum Man.
"Will you take my baby? I'll pay you whatever you want. Take my baby to London."
The midwife put six of the babies in a basket to take to the river. They sounded like kittens. She was going to drown them.
"You wouldn't drown me, would you, Ma?"
"Oh, never. Not you, my precious, my darling Meshach."
"Move on, Meshach!
I don't ditch you as more than I can say. You thank your lucky stars that blood is thicker than water.
Pots,
ribbons and bobbins, scarves and stockings,
woods
and worsted, muslin and linen.
And babies. You take babies."
"Got room for these?
Where are we going, mister?"
"All sound in mind and body.
Stay with my brother.
I'll give you £3. You'll double your profit for sure."
"Let me shut. More brats for the wagon. £4 to you to leave it. Get on with it. I gotta get that ferry. But I'll meet that Gloucester boy sunset."
"Daylight robbery. Here.
One.
Are you the Corum Man? Will you take my baby? Deliver her to that kind man in London. It's true, isn't it? He looks after them till they're ready for work. Look, here, take this purse. There's enough. Please, take my baby to that dear good man, Captain Corum. And here, take this locket. It contains a lock of my hair and this necklace. Ask the captain to tell her one day that her mother loved her and only parted with her to save her from cruel public abuse. Please. You will, won't you?"
On the way to the river, she met the baby's father. "And what have you in there?" he asked. "Only kittens," said she. "I'm on my way to the river to drown them." "Give them to me," said he. "I'm going that way. I'll do it."
"Yeah, move on if you're coming. How many mules?"
"For four. Push the wagon."
"Steady now. River's got a swell on it."
"Here's Barnabas. We're just about make Gloucester before nightfall. Good time to offload a bit of excess baggage." "Stop in these woods! Here, you take the spade, you dig! I'll get the bundles."
"Yes, Dar! Dig!"
All those squealing bundles stuffed into saddlebags. Everyone knew they were babies. They were grateful to him, doing a job no one else wanted to do, taking away their unwanted babies. Mostly, he dug them into rough graves. He told Meshach he was giving them to the angels.
"Catch! Are there angels down there under the mud, Bobby? Can you see angels?"
"You don't need a dig so deep. The foxes will do the rest. Catch!
Move in. Still alive."
"Just do it, damn you!"
"Angels? Where are the angels? Will baby find the angels?"
"Get out of here, idiot. You and your bleeding angels. Give me that spray.
man? Where's my man?
Listen, we're the angels. Where you ought to be, goddammit. Shut up!
When the fine gentleman got to the river, he opened the basket. And what did he find there?
Babies. Little babies.
That nipper of yours has a fine voice there.
Oi, that you, Otis, back again.
What about Sally, my flower? And a plate of pie here on his back.
Me shack with you.
You see, the wagon's got brats to get rid of. Sell them off at the docks. You and his slot, you send them out after you fed the pigs. Mrs. Peebles are good.
In her parlour, Mrs. Lynch, down from Ashbrook.
Mrs. Lynch, our housekeeper at Ashbrook. I was a chorister at Gloucester Cathedral, so Mrs. Lynch came down from Ashbrook from time to time to bring me goodies from my mother, Lady Ashbrook. But if my mother had known, her housekeeper also frequented the Black Dog on her trips to Gloucester, she would have surely been dismissed on the spot.
Mrs. Lynch, eh? We wonder what's going on in Ashbrook. You tell Mrs. P I'm here, will you?
Right, you are. Oh, Otis. Still got wandering hands. Now, where's that boy of yours?
Now, boys. Quiet. Psalm 84. How amiable are... Thy dwellings, thou Lord of hosts. Thank you, Mr. Hines.
Shh, Chester. Shh. Look at the angels. Mars with the angels. That's what Dar says.
I first saw Meshach in Gloucester Cathedral during choir practice. He liked to sneak in to look at the angels in the windows.
I want to be with them. I want to be with Ma.
I'd see him in the shadows, hiding among the pillars.
Look at the angels. Curving wings. Lovely smiles, so kind. Look, this one's like my Ma. Let's find Ma. Let's go flying. Whoosh. Up to the stars. Ma, am I dead now? Can I be with you?
Not yet, Meshach. Not yet.
Oi, you! What the devil do you think you're doing lying in the aisle like that? Get up! Get up!
I want to be with Ma.
I think this place is some kind of doss house. Get out and take that doff with you.
The cathedral may have been a house of God, but at times it was as rough and tough as a bear pit. The cruelty and bullying.
Thomas Ledbury is an ass. For a donkey he would pass if he only had a tail.
If it hadn't been for the music, my spirit might have been broken. And if it hadn't been for Thomas, the new boy I was asked to look after...
Alexander! Please!
That's Mr. Ashbrook, you donkey. Mr. Ashbrook's a gentleman. Go on, give him another twist of the rope.
Here, let me.
Make him laugh, Thomas. All new boys have to go through it. Pleading with them's no good. Be one of them.
That'll twist your guts.
Bacon face.
Boys. Let the little bastard down.
What else can you do, Thomas?
I can play the spoons.
Go on then, show us. Let him down, boys.
Let me get me breath. Right.
Dear Thomas, the best human being that ever walked the earth. It was lonely for me till he came. Me, a gentleman among these labouring boys.
I had never mixed with the others. I was there only for the music. The other boys thought me sullen, unsociable, but Thomas was different. Even though he too was just a working boy, a carpenter's son, and the opposite of me, friendly, sociable, easygoing, yet somehow we were like shadows of each other. He thought as I did, loved music as much as I did. He became my friend. I constantly begged him to come to Ashbrook, but he swore he wasn't fit for the company of gentry. However, I didn't give up.
Margaret, are you free to ride this afternoon?
Oh, sorry, Catherine. Not today. It's Alexander. He'll be home after Easter duties, and my brother, Canon Mabry, is over from Gloucester to discuss the boy's future. Lord Ashbrook doesn't want Alexander to go back to the cathedral after his break, but stay here on the estate now.
Oh, you love having him home. I know how you miss that boy of yours.
Oh, yes, of course, but we agreed he could attend the cathedral school till his voice broke. And we shouldn't break that agreement. He's 14, nearly 15. It'll break by Christmas, surely. Oh, but I dread it, Catherine, because Alexander dreads it.
Oh, dear. But he'll come round, just you see.
He talks of being a composer. Can you imagine such a thing? He's been pestering my brother to let him stay on at the cathedral even after his voice breaks. You can be in no doubt what Lord Ashbrook thinks of that. Oh, but now the councillors are waiting for us, Catherine.
Of course.
Remember that poor child we found abandoned in our woods?
I was so sorry to hear she died in the typhus outbreak.
We've got to do better, Catherine, and help other such foundlings. I aim to get more support from the officers for my orphanage. Let us prepare for battle.
The Ashbrook Orphanage accommodates 15 children.
But there are far more orphans than that, aren't there?
Yes, ma'am. We've turned away 28 children since last October.
Of which how many were under the age of 3?
18, ma'am.
Are you telling me that you found 18 infants under the age of 3 abandoned in our parish?
Quite so, my lady.
And what became of them, Mr. Horton?
6 were already dead. We took in 8, but they died within 3 weeks.
8? Died?
Here on my estate? In our orphanage?
Influenza, my lady.
This is why I insist we must keep to the rules. We can only care for the children of our parish and ours alone.
Quite right, Admiral, quite right. We can't be the repository for every miserable, sinful creature.
We've already had to add a halfpenny to the rates for the church roof.
What is supposed to happen to the children we turn away? I insist we concentrate our minds on this matter. Children must come before even the church roof. I'd like you to come up with some solutions by the next meeting. Shall we adjourn? Oh, can you really?
I loved going home to Ashbrook. Yet my heritage had become my enemy. My class and status forbade me to think of music as anything more than entertainment. A hobby, a skill to entertain the ladies in the drawing room. The closer the time came for my voice to break, the more I felt the compulsion to be a musician, especially to compose.
Thomas, if you can drag yourself away from that tavern music, I've composed something for the violin, for you. Do you want to try it out?
For me, Mr. Ashbrook? Of course I will.
Stay if you want.
No, just larking about. One minute they're out to kill me, next we're on the very best of mates.
Get out your fiddle.
What a turn up, eh? You a composer? Sometimes I think God ain't fair. Give some people everything. First he makes you very rich, then your voice. Mr. Smith calls you
the, Gloucestershire, Nightingale.
But that's not enough. Oh no, God thinks, while I'm at it, I'll make him a composer too. Good as Mr. Andel.
Mr. Ashbrook? What have we here? What's this music?
You're such a buffoon.
I like it. As good as that choral thing you composed for us. Mm. That was amazing. Alexander? Are you offended with me?
I meant it when I said it's really good.
What? Oh, of course not. It's just, once my voice breaks, my music will be over. I'll have to leave the cathedral.
I felt a dark void in the very heart.
Father will expect me to stay on the estate and help him to run it. He hated me coming here, you know. It was only because my mother begged him, because my uncle is a canon here. He was persuaded to let me come. It's not my fate to be a musician, Thomas. Though God knows how I'll live without music.
Don't talk like that. It's your birthright. Any role, you don't have to give up music. It'll be a hobby, that's all. An after-dinner amusement. As for you, you will be a real musician. Music will be your life. It will take you up in the world. But for me, it will be seen as going down. Can you imagine? Handel is considered lower born than I am. Just a tradesman. What a foolish, senseless world this is. When my voice breaks, my life will end.
No, it can't. Once a musician, always a musician, no matter where you be.
Come to Ashbrook after the Easter service, will you? Please. It might be my last as a chorister. I want you to come.
Oh, I don't know. I be not a gentleman and all that. It wouldn't be right.
You're my friend. Gentlemen's got nothing to do with it. I'll make it right. You must come.
At last, I won. He promised to come to Ashbrook. Poor Thomas. How could I understand his agony, the terror he felt at coming to Ashbrook House? One evening, during choir practice, his sister came creeping into the cathedral with a bundle.
Tammy!
What are you doing here, Lizzie?
Our mam sent some clothes for you. Uncle Martin's clothes. What's for you to look like a gentleman? Mam said they fit you, seeing as you're the same age now as when he died.
There was a jacket, breeches of broadcloth, cotton shirt and woven waistcoat.
Thanks, Lizzie. Now go. You'll get me into trouble.
Are you going to be a gentleman, Tommy? You'll never be too grand for us, will you?
Of course not, silly. Now kiss Ma for me and tell her I'll look after Uncle Martin's clothes. Be off.
Good day, Master Alexander. It's a fine day for travelling.
Hello, John. And this fellow is Thomas Lebury, my dear friend. I hope you'll look out for him while he's at Ashbrook.
Good day to you, sir.
Good day.
Of course, Mrs. Lynch had been sent to see to our needs.
Mama still thinks I'm a baby and need accompanying.
Welcome, Master Alexander. And you too, Master Thomas. They can't wait to have you back. And you've yet to meet your mother's cousin, Mrs. Millcote. She's tutor to the little ones, you know. Her daughter Melissa is the same age as Miss Isabel. Oh, such a pretty girl. They're the best of friends.
What's happening?
There's a cart stuck in the rut. Mules wandering all over the place. Look, Alexander.
How long will that take to shift?
Oak and devil of a mule.
Get on with it, blaster!
Out of the way, Chester.
Where's your strength? Come on, horse!
Move, let us pass! Oh, it is you, Otis. Whoop, whoop.
Morning, Otis. Fancy seeing you again,
yeah,
so soon.
Morning, Miss Lynch. Damn it, blast, stuck in the mud. These bleeding horses slithering around like eels. Get on out of it, Mr. Ashbrook, sir. It's best I give the man a hand pushing his cart out of the rut. Otherwise, we'll never get by.
Oh, we'll all help, John.
Master Alexander, no. Oh, lots, no. Covered in mud, you'll be. Let Thomas do it. You stay put, sir.
Nonsense. Come on, Thomas.
I'm with you.
Get as far as Burm's barn. It's no good climbing into the house till the road's dried out of it.
Meshach!
God, that idiot boy, look at him.
Get those mules together!
Yes, Dar, I'm doing it, Dar.
The barn's just at that corner, sir. Can you manage it?
Yes, yes. Of course we can. I hate that man, Otis. Whips those horses to the bone. And his son. Poor idiot, I pity him.
One last push.
No, that's it. The wheel's turning.
Right, it's on its way. Back to the carriage.
Be good, sir. It's not often I get help from a gentleman.
You should treat your horses better.
Otis, don't forget to call at Ashbrook. I'm in need of a thing or two.
Oh, I'd soon as forget my right hand, Mrs. Lynch. Oh, I'll be calling by all right in a day or two. Who's that fine lady called at the Black Dog late last night, eh?
I'll tell you when you come to Ashbrook.
We'll ride on top with you, John.
Never been outside Gloucester before. It's like heaven up here. Bleeding heaven.
Heaven. Yes. Thomas felt he had come to heaven when he came to Ashbrook. Mama welcomed him so kindly, and my little brother and sister, Edward and Alice, adored him. He knew how to play with them, tell them stories, make them laugh, and sort out their squabbles. His embarrassment at his low status and crude ways gave way to marvel and astonishment.
Click-clock, click-clock.
Hush, Eddie, awake my babies.
I'm just being a horse. They're not babies anyway, just silly dolls.
They're not silly dolls. Izzy, tell him off.
Edward, be a good boy. Leave Alice alone, won't you?
They are silly dolls.
You like playing with them too.
Don't. Enough of that. One of you will have to go back to Nanny in the nursery if you don't stop.
Alice, bring your dollies to me.
Sing to me.
Bye, baby bunting. Daddy's gone a hunting. He's
my
gone
angel.
To get a rabbit skin to wrap
that's
his baby
my angel
bunting.
From the cathedral.
Melissa, you do like Alexander, don't you? Now that you're better acquainted, I think he likes you.
Oh, how can you tell, Isabel? I don't think he sees me at all.
I do so want you to like him. Oh, I know he scowls and gets grumpy when he's home. Music, 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 it's all he thinks about. But he's the best brother in the world.
Oh, I can understand how much he loves music. I love it too.
He's much nicer with Thomas around.
Beautiful angel.
I have to go back so soon. I hate it when he's
angel
in.
Of heaven.
I just wish he'd stay and stay. I don't know what I'd do if you weren't here, Melissa. I was so lonely.
I'll look after him.
You'd like
guardian angel.
Stop
that's
chattering.
Me. We'll guard her, won't we, Jester?
Ah! Someone's spying on us!
Where? I can't see anyone.
There was someone peeping in through the window. I saw him.
She's always making up things.
But there was someone there. I saw him. I did, Melissa, I did.
Well, if anyone was there, he's gone now.
Oh, it's just the boys. They've come to visit us in the playhouse.
Heel, Zanzibar. Behave yourself.
Alexander! Thomas!
Thomas fell off his horse.
Are you all right?
Yes, miss. No bones broken.
Thomas, was it you peeping?
Me? Peeping? What do you mean?
Story, please.
Looks like you'd better tell them a story then, Thomas. Right then, I'll tell you about Dawdly Dan. He was called Dawdly because he did dawdle. Well,
how's your music going, Isabel?
Slowly, Alex. I'm not like you, even though I practice every day. But Melissa's so good. You should play duets together. She really can play. Melissa, show him. Play that piece by Orlando Gibbons.
I fear Isabel praises me too highly. I
don't if you don't want to.
Go on.
Must I?
Yes. Don't you think she plays well?
Well enough.
Alex, don't be so grumpy. Melissa's my best friend.
I suppose she's all right. Not sure about her mother, though. Mrs. Milcott puts on a lot of airs and graces for a cousin once or twice removed.
But Mrs. Milcott's not that bad. She's just a stickler for manners, that's all, and fusses too much over Melissa. It drives her mad.
Hush, Jester. Hush. See my angel. My angel.
While Meshach was spying on us at Waterside, his father Otis was loitering around our housekeeper. Everyone kept in with Mrs. Lynch, whether it was my mother, Lady Ashbrook, or any on the estate who had a problem with debt or family matters, or girls in trouble. She was good at listening and overhearing too.
Are you Mrs. Lynch?
Well, look who's here. Otis Gardner. Not just here to sell pots and pans, I'll be bound. Come on in. There's the boot scraper.
Pots and pans. We've got some good knives. What was it you said you wanted? Ribbons.
Here, have some ale.
Well, perhaps we have some other business, eh?
Like what you have with Mrs. Peebles.
You're not jealous of her, are you?
Me? Jealous of her? Poof, that poor pot-marked madam. And what business, may I ask? Pots and pans, unwanted brats, hanging round the dock, selling off lads to the Navy, or hawking little girls over at the big houses or the mills. Call that business? Oh, whatever business she puts your way, I can do better.
Well, you're better looking, that's for sure. Come here and give us a kiss.
Off! Take me seriously. I know enough about you and her to... I think it's time you counted me in.
To what, Mrs. Lynch? Is that a threat I hear?
No threats. Just common sense.
Well, how about you count me in? Let's start with that fine lady we called it the Black Dog in the dead of night. Came in a carriage. Who was she, Mrs. Lynch?
You're right to ask me. I got my ear to the very heart of society. All those milords and ladies think they're as pure as the driven snow. You know they're not. The only difference is they've got money, and they'll pay like nobody's business to avert a scandal. I've done my bit to help in my time, and I've been here a long time. Over 20 years, it's me they come to.
Reliable Mrs. Lynch, you come here. The indispensable Mrs. Lynch.
That's right. That's how I know. And you? They say folks are calling you the Coram Man. What's it mean? Coram.
Captain Coram. Some bleeding out sea dog makes a fortune in the Americas, decides to spend it all on godforsaken bastards, would you believe? He builds hospitals and takes in dumb brats, what a waste. But every poor silly girl from all over the country have heard of him. When they know I'm on the London Road, they throw themselves at me to take their little bastards. God, you should see how they pay the poor silly cows. They think it's Jesus Christ himself and they call me the Coram Man. But I'm doing good enough business here for the moment. I've got other plans up my sleeve.
Sure you have. You can do better than foundlings. We can. You and I together, we could be a team. We both know who's willing to pay the most. Those with the most to lose. Here, let me fill you up. That's where I come in, don't I? Hey, Otis? You need people like me. Look at my connections. Next time you come by, I may have some business to put your way.
Thomas, do your Dr. Smith impersonation.
Melissa.
Oh, yes, Thomas, do, please.
I don't think I should.
Oh, let the boy eat.
Oh, Mama, you must hear him. Thomas, do Dr. Smith. Go on, it's all right.
The boy, is no peacock. I, assure you. He's, a nightingale. Indeed, Dr. Smith thinks he's, a genius.
I have to admit it's a pretty good imitation of our dear Dr. Smith.
Isn't he funny? Oh, Thomas, you're so funny. I'm so glad you're here.
Yes, indeed. You've brought laughter into our house. Thank you, Thomas. Well, if everyone has had sufficient, let us adjourn to the drawing room and have some music.
Better let us hear that voice of yours as much as possible, eh, Alex? Won't be long now before it breaks.
Yes, sir. But, sir, I really want to stay on at the cathedral after it breaks. Speak to my father. Tell him.
Alex, Thomas, lead the way.
Tarum tantum through the town of Ramsey. Hi diddle um come over the lea. Hi diddle um come feedle.
Bravo! Bravo!
Well done, my darlings.
Alex, now you. Shall I accompany?
Thank you, Uncle. This one's unaccompanied. For you, Mother.
The silver swan, who leaving heard no note, when death approached and knocked a silent throat.
He longs to stay on after his voice breaks. He's been pestering me to have words with William.
He can't. No, he can't. Please, Geoffrey, make him see sense. William is already getting impatient.
I've tried. Alexander is a stubborn boy.
Oh, Sir William!
I see our songbird is in fine voice.
Papa! Papa's home!
Hello, Papa.
Good to see you, dear boy.
Why didn't you send word you were on your way? Here, let me take your cloak. Melissa, be a dear and send word to cook to prepare a plate for his lordship.
Of course.
Carry on, children. Don't let me interrupt the proceedings. Canon, good to see you. Staying long?
Just another day. I have to be back at the cathedral by Sunday. My goodness, sir. That boy of yours is a fine musician. Quite a prodigy. In Gloucester, we're calling him our own little nightingale. You must be so proud of him.
I have enough songbirds on this estate. What I need is a man with common sense, muscle, guts, and a brain for business.
Oh.
Father, may I introduce you to my friend, Thomas Ledbury?
Your humble servant, sir.
Ah, you're a fine fellow. Good square shoulders, eh?
We're both in the choir school. He's an excellent musician.
But not like Master Alexander. He's, well, he's known as Gloucestershire's...
Nightingale, yes. So I hear.
I've had your dinner taken to the library, William. Perhaps Geoffrey and I can join you while you eat.
Alexander, sing us another song. Melissa, please accompany him. You're much better than I am.
Oh, well, I don't think I'm good enough.
Of course you are, Melissa. Go on, girl.
Here, cousin, can you read this?
I'll do my best. I hope you'll bear with me.
Drop, drop, slow tears and bathe.
My angel. She's my angel.
Melissa played. I stood behind her and I sang. We were united, the two of us. United in music. I looked down on her rich hair, the colour of horse chestnuts. I saw the contours of her pale neck, her arms, her fingers. I leaned over to turn the page. I touched her and wanted to go on touching her forever.
She's mine. Mine. Get away from her. He can't have her, can he, Ma?
Later we came to the playhouse, just Melissa and I. I didn't know, damn it, I didn't know that pitiful creature Meshach followed us like a familiar.
Even on this creaky old playhouse instrument, you play like an angel. Thank you for coming. I can't stand the atmosphere in that drawing room, especially when Papa's home. He hates my music.
Oh, Alex, I'm sure he doesn't.
Can I? I love your fingers. Isabel's right. You play beautifully.
Do I?
She let me hold her fingers. I felt feelings I had never known before. A strange passion I had never even felt with music swept over me, violent and tender all at the same time. I wanted to hold her, kiss her.
She's turning to him. Don't look at him. Look at me, my angel. Look at your Meshach.
Meshach! The devil are you? Get the mules harnessed. Gotta get on the road to London. Dump him. That's what I should have done after his mother died. No stone round my bleeding neck. Meshach!
A few days later, Otis and Meshach reached London and entered its teeming, carriage-filled thoroughfares and made their way northwards into the countryside of Lamb's Conduit Fields and arrived at the iron-wrought gates of the Coram Hospital for the education of abandoned and deserted children.
Baby, subject to a health check. Red ball, baby goes on waiting list. Black ball, rejection, take it away.
Meshach, lose yourself while you do business.
Yes, Dar.
You're back.
G'day, Mrs. Wood. Looking in the bloom of youth, I see.
Oh, I'm well enough.
Are them babies I hear coming from your saddlebags? Follow me round to the grain stall, more private.
They have a lottery now. How am I supposed to smuggle them in?
Yeah, we'll skip the lottery. There's no black balls. Just wait. You take these six, I'll dispose of the six girls and boys for you. Always need boys on a ship. Girls, well, I know what to do about them.
Sell them, you mean? The slave trade works both ways. I want a decent cut this time, Otis. You're getting stingy. If the governors find out, I'll lose my job.
Oh, but they won't find out. Now look. You see this black baby here?
Oh.
He's mine, right?
A black baby, born of a slave. Otis picked it up at the docks. Meshach had never seen such a thing before. He stared at its quivering body. It was human, wasn't it? He licked his finger and ran it over the baby's skin to see if the black would come off. He looked into its black, glimmering eyes and felt a strange tenderness.
Glass beads round his neck.
In Africa, he's just off a slave ship. He thought he were gone and more or less dropped him in my lap. Black baby, my bully. You keep me for me, all right? He's my investment.
And when do I get paid?
Oh, don't worry, you'll get paid. You just keep him alive for me. Oh, and call him Toby. After me dad. And where's that blithering son of mine? Meshach!
Ma, what did the gentleman do with the babies that weren't kittens?
He hid them and cared for them and fed them, clothed them, loved them, and he waited.
Is my angel waiting for me? Ma, Ma, when are we going back to Ashbrook, eh, Jester? Hey, my dear old pal. When do I see my angel?
Hey, Shaq! Where the devil are you?
Christmas was coming, and everyone at Ashbrook would descend from the hills to Gloucester to hear me sing. It would be my last Christmas as a chorister. But I had become a composer. I wanted them to hear the anthem I had composed especially for the occasion. I wanted to prove that I must continue my life in music.
Thomas Digbury, take over.
He wanted us to hear his composition.
Composition be damned. The sooner he learns his place, the better. I sent word he was to pack up his things right away. At last, I'll have my son back where he belongs.
Mrs. Lynch!
Yes, sir?
Get George! I want the removal of every instrument in the house. My son has come home. I don't want him to have the slightest distraction from his duties from now on.
No, Father, no!
William, show some forbearance.
Oh, please don't. This will kill Alexander.
Why, Father, why? Why are you doing this to me? Is it enough that you bundled me away from Gloucester without even giving me time to say goodbye to Thomas? How could you?
I think it's time you learnt where your duties lie and who's in charge here, even if I have to beat it into you.
No, Papa, no!
There! Oh! I'll beat that music madness out of you, do you hear? The voice has gone. The bird has flown. We will make a man of you now. From now on, you will learn to become master of Ashbrook. Learn, Alexander. Learn to love your heritage.
Learn to love your heritage? Oh, Father, why couldn't you see? I had another heritage, a heritage of the soul.
It's me, Melissa. I had to come. I had to talk to you. I'm so sorry. Your father was so cruel.
He's destroyed my life. How can I go on without music?
But this is what I wanted to tell you. There's one instrument he forgot.
Where?
The keyboard in Waterside.
Forget my fate. Remember me, but forget my
My voice is gone, but you found yours. It's beautiful. You'll always remember me, won't you? You're shivering. Here, let me hold you.
I wrapped her in my cloak.
He's touching her, her shoulders, pressing his face in her hair.
I drew her close, felt her hair on my cheek, smelt her skin.
Oh, Alexander.
I held her as I never knew I was capable of doing. I kissed her.
My angel. My angel.
Oh, Madge. They're lying down. She's in his arms. Her lips are touching his, kissing my angel. Oh, Madge.
What's that? It's nothing. Just foxes.
There's nowhere on earth to compare with this, eh?
It's the most beautiful place on earth.
That day, my father and I rode together over the estate. It was the first time we'd been alone together since he beat me. I was young. I had not forgiven him. Just as he hadn't heard my voice, I couldn't hear his.
Look, the best view in Gloucestershire. This is your heritage, Alex. This is what I've always wanted for you. Love it as I do.
I began to compose my farewell letter.
My dear Papa,
Alexander, see that?
I cannot live without music. Without music, I cannot be a man. Least of all, the kind of man you want your elder son to be. I love Ashbrook. Of that there is no doubt. But I love it in my way. As a composer.
Most of our lower
when I ride through the woods, I hear music. I hear the trees making music when the wind blows. How the trunks sing as they sway and creak. When I see the land changing with the seasons from red earth to soft green, and then the yellow of the summer, it is my inspiration, and my spirit is moved to compose. But you see your investment. You are calculating the yield and the profit.
One day, you will be master and guardian of Ashbrook.
But I am not the man for the job. It will destroy me, and in turn, I would destroy Ashbrook. It is only because I know my brother can take over that I am able to make the decision to leave Ashbrook and my inheritance.
Master Ashbrook has disappeared. Gone.
No one's seen the boy since yesterday evening.
Melissa, Alexander's gone. Do you know where? Do you? You and Hugh, you've been seeing a lot of each other recently. Been as close as lovebirds.
Alexander. Gone. He can't have. He would have...
Would have what, Melissa? Told you and not me. Not Mama or Papa. Who do you think you are?
Isabel, please don't. Don't talk like that, I beseech you. Believe me, I have no idea where he is. No idea that he was going anywhere. Isabel...
Organise a search party. We must find him. Question his friend, Thomas, at the cathedral.
I left her a letter too.
My dearest, sweetest and most treasured Melissa. Alexander.
Suffice it to say that I've gone. I have to seek a life in music.
What have you done? Isabel, here, read this. Music is my life, not just an amusement. Without music, I can have no life worth living. But I love you, Melissa, and as soon as I am established in my chosen profession, I will send for you. And if you still love me, will ask you to be my wife. You marry Alexander? Are you mad? Ruined our lives. Papa's so angry he's disinherited him, scratched out his name from the family Bible. Mama is ill with distress. How could you? How could you? Isabel, please. I'm so sorry. So very sorry.
Melissa, dear, you are unwell. What's wrong? What do you think, Mrs. Lynch?
It looks like a chill on the stomach.
I have a remedy of ginger and comfrey.
You've hardly eaten a thing. Eat up. You'll fade away.
Send Tabitha for it in half an hour.
It will need to infuse. I can't eat, yet I'm getting fat. This bodice no longer fits. Look at my stomach.
Miss, what is it?
There's something moving. Feel it. Give me your hand. There. Can you feel it? Tabitha, what is it?
Why, Miss Melissa, it is only your baby quickening inside you.
Baby? My baby, did you say? Quickening? What do you mean? What baby? How can there be a baby? What are you talking about? How dare you be so insolent?
I'm sorry, miss. I'm sorry. I thought you knew.
Oh, heavens. What will become of us? We'll be thrown out, destitute. We'll kill Mama.
You should tell your mother.
No. Get out. And don't you dare tell her. Don't tell anyone. Do you hear me?
I won't, miss. I promise.
It's all my fault. It's all my fault. Where can I go? What shall I do? I wish I was dead.
When death approached and knocked a silent throat.
Hush, my angel, hush. Look, Ma. You see her? It's my angel. See how her image reflects in the ripples? She's there. She's come to me. Come, my angel. Come. Come to me, Shank.
Just one step. Two. And I'll be at peace.
My angel!
Mrs. Millcote? Madam, is the young missus still suffering from a stomach chill?
Melissa? No, it's, you know, the time of the month coming up, just a bit of tummy ache. She's over at the playhouse with Isabel, so there can't be much wrong with her.
I'll make up another of my concoctions. But if you require any other kind of help, you know you can count on me. There are things...
Thank you, Mrs. Lynch, that will be all. I'll send Tabitha along for your concoction.
Very well, madam.
Count on her. That woman overreaches herself.
Melissa, can I come in? Oh, Melissa, I have to know. What's wrong with you? Are you ill? Do you think I haven't forgiven you? For what I have to tell you, there is no forgiveness. A baby? Alexander's baby? You must have it here in the playhouse. We'll keep it a secret. No one will ever know. I mean, look, we have everything we need. We can use Dolly's cradle and clothes. Well, what should we call the baby? Something beginning with A? Alexander if it's a boy, and Alexia if it's a girl, and I'm going to knit a baby shawl and stick the letter A in the corner. Oh, Melissa! Melissa?
Ah, Mrs. Peebles. You expecting Otis in the near future?
Who's to say, Mrs. Lynch? But should I tell him you was inquiring after him, eh?
Kindly ask him to call at Ashbrook. Just tell him I may be able to put some business his way if he comes in the next month or two.
Oh, it's coming. Isabel, my baby's coming. Tabitha, help me. I'm frightened.
I must get your mother.
No. For God's sake, no. Mrs. Lynch, then. Fetch Mrs. Lynch.
My angel. My angel. My angel.
Oh, my God. What will become of us, Mrs. Lynch?
Control yourself. Our plan will work. Otis is on his way.
Otis?
Otis Gardner, the pots man. He'll take the baby. No one will know except you and me. Tell Miss Melissa the child is dead. It's for the best. Otis will take it to London. You've heard of Coram.
Oh, Mama!
I'm here, my darling.
darling.
Oh. Why didn't you tell me? Oh. How could I have been so blind?
There, there, miss. You've done it. And look, it's a boy. A lovely boy. Oh. Can you hold it, Miss Isabel, while I knot the cord?
Alyssa, you have a son. Alexander, oh, he's so pale, so solemn, frowning as if he carries all the woes of the world.
Give it to me. I'll take care of everything now.
Why isn't he crying? I want to hear him cry. Let me see him.
Best not to. Forget him. Forget it ever happened. Tabitha, give me the basket of shawls. Make sure your mistress is properly cleaned up.
Where are you taking him?
I know what to do.
Mrs. Lynch!
Calm yourself, madam. Do what we agreed. Now, I suggest you see to your daughter.
Yes. Yes. Melissa. Darling. Your baby's dead.
No. No, Isabel!
Shh. Hush, dearest. I'm here.
Hush. Shh.
Wait!
Shh. Wait! I must hold him just for a minute.
Be quick!
Oh, my grandson.
Grandson? Baby? Melissa? My angel baby?
Where is Lockett? Oh, darling boy. Forgive me.
Give him to me. There's no time to lose. Go back to your daughter now. And remember, the baby's dead. Otis, take it to Coram as agreed. The Millcote girl thinks it's dead. If it isn't, it soon will be. But the mother must believe he's alive if you're to keep getting paid. He is your first payment. And you'll get more every time you call, so long as Mrs. Millcote believes he's alive. There's shawls in the basket.
All right, so dear. Oh, I'll be back, be alive right there, Mrs. Lynch. Always happy to do business with you.
Just do it right.
Mishak, try that blithering dog up. Get over here.
Yes, darling, we'll do that. Come on, Jester, over here. I'll be back and you shall have some of my supper.
Shut up! Here. Take this brat. You get rid of it. Dead anyway. You find a ditch, you're digging in. Basket, too. Dig them in deep. And get back to the wagon. Packing them. We're moving on tonight. Get on with it.
Remember how the gentleman took the basket?
Yes, Ma. I have a basket with a babby. Angel's babby. Don't be dead. Stay with me. Oh, still covered in blood and muck. Didn't even clean you up. Here. Oh, washed you in the pond. Cold, is it? Oh, baby lives. Oh, hush. Baby, hush. Mustn't let Dar hear you. Here. Into my jacket you go. You'll soon be warm, my angel's baby. I won't leave you in the woods. I'll take you to London. I'll take you to Coram. And I'll be your mammy now.
He looked east. Coram, he said softly. Coram. And as the crow flies, Meshach plunged straight into the rough, up the hillside, heading into the dawn and London.
But forget my fate, remember me, but forget my fate.
In The Coram Man, part one of Coram Boy by Jamila Gavin, Jonathan Slinger was Alexander as narrator, and Mark Warren, Otis Gardner. Meshach was played by Paul Reddy, Meshach's mother, Rachel Atkins, Mrs. Lynch, Deborah Finley, young Alexander, Finley Glenn, young Thomas, Tom Hope, Lady Ashbrook, Jenny Funnel, Lord Ashbrook, Pip Torrens, and Mrs. Millcote, Serena Evans. Melissa, Abby Ford, Isabel, Julie Cox, Alice, Alice Hoskins Hill, Edward, Sebastian Davies, Matron, Joanna Wake, Mr. Horton, Ian Masters, Cleric, Roger May, Admiral Bailey, Richard Owens, Tabitha, Sarah Markland, and Canon Maybury by David Holt. The children were played by Thomas Diedegan, Abigail Sitton, and Tom Glenister. The musical arranger was Margaret Vincent, and the music was performed by the Dulwich Coram Boy Choir and musicians. Coram Boy was written and dramatized for radio by Jamila Gavin and directed by Celia DeWolf. It was a peer production for BBC Radio 4.
And tomorrow, do not miss the concluding part of The Coram Boy.
They say that Manus, the old chieftain of this place, had some great treasure.
How did he come to lose it?
Nobody knows. Or if they did once, they aren't telling.
A Scottish island haunted by secrets.
What are we to do, Grizzle?
Why do you ask me?
Because you are a woman of great contrivance.
A history of love and betrayal.
You are free to roam the island as far as you wish. There is no way to leave it, so you should have no hopes of escape.
The Curiosity Cabinet on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
How can I bear it?
Come back from the edge at least.
Starts on Wednesday at 11:15 in the morning and again in the evening at 9:15.
Now, to mark National Poetry Day on Thursday, Joseph Milson will read Alfred Lord Tennyson's 1855 dark and haunting poem, Maud.
But a rose, and all by myself in my own dark garden ground, listening now to the tide in its broad-flung shipwrecking roar, now to the scream of a maddened beach dragged down by the wave, walked in a wintry wind by a ghastly glimmer, and found a shining daffodil dead, and Orion low in his grave.
Tennyson's Maud on 4 Extra this Thursday at 10, and again in the afternoon at 3.
The digital station for comedy, drama and entertainment. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
We're apart now for one whole hour. Please don't cry. It's Wes Butters. When we are reunited at 5, I'll have a great selection of comedy to keep us amused. In the meantime, though, it's 4 o'clock now, and that means it's time for this.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, I'm Mel Gedroych, and welcome to the 4 o'clock show. You join me in the greenery of my garden. I'm hunched down in a specially constructed bird hide, on the lookout for rare and beautiful specimens of flight. Not much happening at the moment. There are a couple of wrens over there, a mangy pigeon or two with those strange gnarled pink feet, and a couple of warblers.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by.
I do wish Susan Boyle and Alfie Burr would use their own garden for singing practice. Anyway, I love my garden. Can I stop doing the hushed voice? I think I will. I love my garden. Yes, I do. Just like Tom does in our current story, Tom's Midnight Garden by Philippa Pierce.
Aunt Gwen said eagerly, "We can do so much now that you're out of quarantine for measles. You needn't be cooped up indoors any longer, Tom." Tom said, "Thank you," but he lived his real and interesting life at night time when he went into the garden. In the daytime, he wanted only peace, to think back and to think forwards, always to the garden.
Frankly, I've got to come clean. I'm not having much luck with this bird-watching business. Now, what I need to do is take some tips from some real twitchers like Brett Westwood and Stephen Moss.
What I really love about this farm is that it's a very wildlife-friendly place. There are different crops, field margins, there's long grass, there's rough grassland, there's hedgerows. So it's a mosaic of habitats, and that provides food and shelter for the birds that live here.
Yes, we'll go hunting for farmland birds later in the show, but wait, I can't believe it. This is very exciting. It's the first time I've spotted him since last Friday. It's the greater balding Caledonian quisling, Fred Macaulay, and his nest of Keep It In The Family contestants.
In the book Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe, the title character names his manservant after which day of the week?
Thursday.
Oh, one day out. It was Friday. He was looking forward to the weekend.
Nail-biting stuff there, and I can guarantee you there'll be a lot more from Fred and the 4 o'clock show quizzes later in the show. Right now, however, I'm going to swap my bird-watching hide for my magic bus Melvin
You know what's coming as we set off on another magical mystery tour. Now, as ever, we're heading for an undisclosed location. I will bring you some rather cryptic clues throughout the show, and you have to guess where we're going. So, first clue. This place has cows you can't milk. Yeah? Once again, this place has cows you can't milk. What? Sorry, no back chat. What do you mean it's too hard? Look, I never promised you a rose garden, but I did promise you Tom's midnight garden. Oh, that was seamless.
In a letter to his brother, Peter, he wrote, I'm glad your measles are over. I wish you were here. All the yew trees round the lawn have names. There's one called Lookout and another called Trixie. Hattie and I are building a tree house in the one called the Steps of St Paul's.
In today's episode, our eponymous hero writes to his brother about the larger yew trees in his magic midnight world. Now, yew trees are pretty special. They can grow to enormous heights and widths, but what's really impressive is how old they live. In fact, yew trees can live thousands of years, as presenter Lionel Kellaway found out from Forrester.